Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
1380 WAOK.
All right, welcome back to News and Talk 1380 WALK. We told you we were going to bring the superintendent in, and we're glad that Dr. Maria Christoffen agreed to come in. A lot has happened. We started this process really like last week before all of the news broke. Dr. Christoffen, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you for inviting me, and thank you for your commitment to Atlanta Public Schools with the Real Men Read program. It is awesome. So thank you for being committed to the
kids. We love doing it. I tell people I'm a proud product of APS, having gone to Perkinson Elementary School and Price when it was a middle school in North Fulton. Very proud product. But let's get it. We know we got limited time. And everybody want to know what is going on. Let's just dive right into it. Prior to us talking, what I did not know was there was a controversy brewing around the renewal or non-renewal of your contract, which came to a head apparently on Tuesday. And there's been much said about it. Tell us as best you can what happened.
Well, I would say that, it begins with the end of the school year. We finished the school year in June, where I finished my fifth evaluation for Atlanta Public Schools, meeting and exceeding expectations, and doing the job that the board set forth for the superintendent. I am measured against an evaluation every year, and I report to the board on that. I actually get monitored throughout the school year, even with a mid-year check-in. So we finished with a very strong end, and once the school year ended, there were initial conversations with the chair of the board saying that, throughout the summer, we perhaps needed to start talking to other board members, just clarifying some questions they may still have. And we didn't have a board meeting through the summer, so we didn't get to really talk as a board until our August board meeting, where I answered all questions. And from there, there seemed to be some reservation from some of our board members about doing an extension. And so what I spent my time doing is trying to understand where people were, why they were where they were. Mm-hmm. But going into the Monday meeting, I will say that it was my understanding that four board members supported the extension and four did not. And that was Sunday night, and Monday going into the executive session, that was what I was led to believe, which did not necessarily mean that there was a majority to extend or not extend. It was split.
It has been said publicly that you all, this decision had been made some time ago, at least in July. You knew about it, that they did not, that by agreement, you all said you all would not discuss it publicly. That it was said that you wanted to have a fresh start for the school year, and because this issue had not been resolved publicly, I think the chairman said publicly that this was not a new issue. True or not true? That the non-renewal should not have come as a surprise to you.
What I know is that when I would say from my perspective, okay. Everybody can have their own opinion.
Absolutely.
I was told that that there were four votes for support, and then it was that I needed to go meet and talk to board members about other personal concerns they may have, and that is what I did. And then the story changed at various points.
Okay.
And I was even told that, you know, specific board members were not supportive, but when I would meet with them, they would say that they were a yes vote.
Okay.
And so I got a lot of mixed information. I know that it is, I know that people are political, they have their own personalities and styles. And not all the time do they want to say all things to all people.
Mm-hmm.
But I did feel like, and I shared this with the chair, that it was a bit of shadow boxing all summer, not quite knowing exactly who was saying what, why. And what I wanted to know was to give us a chance to start the school year, get into a board meeting, and have a conversation with everyone at the table. And when we did have that conversation, I cannot talk about it because it was in executive session. I know that I believe I answered the one question that was raised. And I do not believe, and I say this with all the facts that I know, that that we did not have a 5-4 circumstance. It was split 4-4. But I was surprised to read some of the things in the paper when I was led to believe that it was a split vote.
And I'm looking at those. In addition to Estevez, Cynthia Briscoe Brown, Leslie Grant, Michelle Olympiadis said they oppose extending the superintendent contract. Erica Mitchell, who along with Olympiadis and Grant voted against Karstafrin last contract renewal, could not be reached for comment. Have you lost the confidence of this board? And if so, why would you want to continue to work for a board that seems to be very much divided?
Well, they've never said they've lost confidence in the work. I mean, that is crystal clear. They keep saying that it's not about performance.
Okay.
So the question still has remained when you know, I push on wanting to understand more what's behind all of it so we can get clear about what I can address and what I can't address. You can see, as chronicled, a lot of different changing rationales. And so for me, I just believe that as an executive who has to run 6,000 employees, that you have a very clear evaluation structure. What do you want the person to do? Tell them whether or not they're doing it. If they need to improve, you articulate where they need to improve, and then you give them a chance to improve. And from there, you say it's a yes or no for the next year. We do that for teachers and principals and staff all the time.
Certainly.
So what I know is that based on the expectations that were set out to me, and those expectations were quite comprehensive, like meeting academic milestones, graduation rates, making sure that we were implementing SPLOST for facilities and renovations, safety and security, food and nutrition. I had another one for the collectible tax digest, making sure that we were reducing any pressures on our budget. I mean, there were 9 goals that were very comprehensive in my evaluation, and those were ones that I achieved. So I can't speak to the various things that have been said and have changed throughout this process, but I do know that everyone I work with and people who understand the work that we are doing, that we have plenty of evidence about how we work together, collaboration, getting things done, very complicated, very political issues that I had to manage on my own at the direction of the board. And Mr. Bozeman, I want to be clear, there is nothing this superintendent does that our board does not direct. Right. So I don't get to just do what I want. Right. I have to do what they tell me to do. And when I and we negotiate how much I feel like I can do, but I haven't done anything that this board has not asked me to achieve.
All right, 404-892-2703. We got a lot of discussion here. And before we take the call, you can call and wait. Talk about, we'll come back, because what I try to do with my show, Dr. Karstafrin, and instead of, I try to educate people by process.
Yeah.
So when we come back from the break, we got to take a break. I want you to talk about what is the board's responsibility from what we said. They said the broad policy. You are employee of the Atlanta Board of Education, Atlanta, the board. And what is their responsibility? And then as superintendent, what is your responsibility? And then I want us to go back to if it's 9 evaluative issues that they issued you a contract and say, look, we need to move the needle on these areas. And I want you to go back through those and talk about what you have done in those areas. Well, you've had successes, well, you've had challenges, and what did you see as the next thing that you needed to have tackled? Our special guest inside the studio is Dr. Maria Karstoffen. She is the superintendent of the Atlanta Public Schools. 404-892-2703. And what can be done? Now, we good, bad, otherwise, you're going to be here through June 2020, and that's a whole school year. What do we need to get done? 404-892-2703. We'll be back. It's Too Much Truth with Derek Bozeman on News and Talk 1380.
404-892-2703 on News and Talk 1380. WAOK.
It's a major move right here, baby. You got to get with it or get lost. Understand? Yeah. This young lord reporting live from Atlanta, Georgia.
All right, welcome back to News and Talk 1380 WLK. Well, you know, some say they saw it coming. Others say we did not. Maria Karstoffen, the superintendent of Atlanta Public School, is here to explain what she's been doing the last 5 years as the superintendent. Maria, talk about, we'll get back to process, because I think it is important where we are in terms of the process. But I want you to tell us about, you said you were being evaluated on a matrix that included nine areas. What did this board give you when they gave you the contract? Arguably, this board is not the board that hired you.
Right.
It's a little bit
but
different.
But there are people who were from the first board who are still on the board. So when I first started 5 years ago, the evaluation was structured against the charter for the school system, the position description of superintendent, and then what we call sort of SMART goals. They are specific. They are time-bound. They are targeted for 1 year's worth of work. So that evaluation has always been aligned to the strategic plan. The strategic plan was approved by the board, and I have to report on the work from 1 year to the next to get that strategic plan done. So you'll see things inside it that have kind of like four pillars. One's going to be about academics. Another one's going to be about systems and resources, talent management, and culture in the system. And what we have to do from 1 year to the next might change, but there are these overarching expectations related to that. We used to have in the evaluation detailed targets around governance and relationships and collaboration and engagement. But over time, as the board shifted and changed, those things were removed.
All right. Talk about the board responsibility in yours. You do not come up with the strategic plan yourself. They give you the strategic vision as a board. Do y'all go back and forth and negotiate that? Or they say, look, Maria, here's what we need you to do. The board has charretted on this. We have looked over it. These are the things we need for you to accomplish this year.
Right.
Or do y'all kind of go back and forth on that?
Yeah. So interestingly enough, since I started, the vision and mission, once we did that with the community back in 2014, has stayed. It has stayed consistent through that time. Our values, our guiding principles also have been consistent. So the board actually sets the thing that changes the most is mostly around what I would call policy, the board's basic direction to the administration about what you can and cannot do, and sometimes a little bit about how you do the work. And we then developed administrative procedures on how we implement it so that it's transparent to the public. So that is all aligned to that vision and mission, the guiding principles and values. And from there, they will go into something like the strategic plan that we vet it with the community, the board approves it, and then those details get baked from 1 year to the next into the superintendent's evaluation.
All right, let's talk about some of the issues that have been controversial while you're here.
There have been many.
Opening and closing of schools. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a big one, because mm-hmm. you are basically moving or removing, you know, the things that people are familiar with. You've had to do that issue, but you said something that nothing you do as a superintendent is not done without the
approval of the board. Yes. Right. So when we first started, you know that we were all under the pressure of a potential state takeover. The majority of the schools on that list for the governor's state takeover concept were coming out of Atlanta Public Schools. And as you can expect, they were in the south side of the city. So we made an agreement that at the time that we cared to continue to control our local control, to do everything we could to make sure that those schools stayed with Atlanta and would not be pulled out of the system to be managed by the state. Now, things have changed, but that was the spirit under which we went into a very aggressive strategy around making sure that we had a plan in place to be able to demonstrate, if that got approved by the state, that we were absolutely in control of the future of those schools. Now, Atlanta needed to do two things. We need to do it no matter what, because of the cheating scandal and the aftermath and all of the low performance related to what happened. But at the same time, we knew we were on a different, very aggressive potential loss of local control related to that state takeover. And that involved a lot of work with the board. And I have heard reported by board members, the chair in particular, that these challenges with the superintendent went back to 2014. That is absolutely not true. I can show and demonstrate that our board, while we disagreed about closures and consolidations and program approaches, we still got to a vote, many of those votes unanimous, at most like 8-1s, maybe a 7-2. They were controversial in concept, but we would go to community meetings, and I'm not making this up, you know, the kids call them squads. After we finish a community meeting, a couple of board members, the representative of the district, the at-large, a board member who had nothing related to it, would sit down with the superintendent and key members of the team to talk about how would we, given what we've heard, how do you create a strategy that while may not be popular, but would actually help us get closer to achieving those goals. That was not done in secret. That was not done without a lot of process and collaboration. And there are some projects that literally you would have to go to night meetings that would go to 11 o'clock at night with like dozens of partners, such as, Woodson Park, where you do the Real Men work. Mm-hmm. You know that school. That is a $18.5 million investment with APS, plus another $50 million from the community to do a huge revitalization project. We've been working on that for 4 years. And so to say that that APS wasn't collaborating, or the superintendent and the board couldn't figure out how to work together, is just not true. Are there personality challenges? Always. Is the work really hard? Absolutely. Are you going to get on each other's nerves? No doubt. But did we do good work for kids and get it done? Look at every board meeting from the day I started to even June. Our meetings are tight. They're not messy. We're not acting a fool. It's not a circus. And we get the job done for kids. And so while I know there might be other tensions or issues, the most important thing that I thought we have continued to demonstrate is that children were our North Star. And when it came down to getting the business done of this district, that was important enough for everything else, politics or whatever, to fall to the wayside so that we could actually serve the kids and families of Atlanta. I believe we've done that for 5 consecutive years and created a culture that is willing to innovate, push, discuss, and do it without cutting any corners. That's a big change for Atlanta Public Schools.
Yeah. It sounds like you're having to defend your record. Is that
maybe
what you're doing?
I haven't thought about it that way, but I can appreciate your perspective on that. Maybe that is it.
You walk into the meeting. Did you walk into the meeting Tuesday?
It was Monday. It was Monday.
Did you walk into the meeting not knowing that would not be a non-renewal? Did you walk into, it sounds like you were caught off guard. Were you?
I mean, to be fair, like the conversations were escalating to talk about how we could figure out a pathway forward. I did meet with the chair. Okay.
So you made it very clear, because
made it crystal clear
that
where
you
wanted
to be here.
Yes.
But you know that you had a contract that went through 2020.
Yes.
So what that meant is we can non-renew. We don't have to have another conversation about it. You have a contract that will end at the end of the school term.
Absolutely.
Didn't require anything else.
Correct.
But you made it publicly known to your board you would like an extension of your contract.
I made it clear to each individual board member and, you know, that I absolutely, for two things, I want to stay so that we can, I said this on the, in a radio interview that was taped before the first day of school, Didn't mean to ruffle feathers, mm-hmm. not trying to get out in
yeah,
front of people.
I heard that.
But I made it crystal clear that for me, I believe after you close and consolidate 13 schools, mm-hmm. when you have asked people to, I mean, we literally have, you know, eliminated positions and departments. When you go in and tell people that we're going to shift around SPLOS dollars to do this project over that project, we have asked a lot of this community. And to their credit, while there have been some hiccups and some bumps along the way, they trusted us enough to do it. And since we are done it, but we're not on the other side of finishing it, what I'm saying is I want to be held accountable. I am perfectly fine being responsible on the work that I am supposed to do. And my concern is that when you have a fragile system like Atlanta Public Schools that has not been able to get over the entire hump of the cheating scandal, has not been able to fully justify its all of what it is, because not all scores are great and we have a large achievement gap, that you do need to have, in my opinion, enough accountability where someone is standing at the end of all you've asked the community to do with you and say, we met this target, we didn't. We exceeded this, we're still flat. But where the community could get closure on a very, very, very bad time for the district and the nation. And so I wanted to finish the work. And I just feel like I should be able to say that, but the board does have the authority to make its own decision.
404-892-2703. We got to take a break. When we come back, we want to talk about the achievement gap. We want to talk about the literacy rate and some of the other things that needs to be done. It was said that below I-20, that 90% of the schools are not reading on level. Is that true?
That is not true. We have got to clear that up.
We'll
thank you so much for giving me that opportunity.
And tell us about it. 404-892-2703. Then we got folks on the phones. We'll be back. It's Too Much Truth with Derek Bozeman on News and Talk 1380 WALK. Understand is how things work. And having been a public education watcher for a long time, I kind of understand it. But I want the superintendent to tell us. Let's go back to this governance issue.
Yeah.
Policy comes from
the board. Yes.
Now, what that means is they give you a broad say, look, we want to move the literacy rate, or we want to move the graduation rate by 5-10%. We need you to get us a plan to get us there.
That's actually not policy.
Okay.
That's actually something I would see in my evaluation. The policy might say that Atlanta Public Schools can, like, you must graduate students that meet these standards by Georgia, the Department of Education, okay, expectations, blah, 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 blah. That so it's a very, it's much more broad in its concept. A policy, for example, that I hope we talk about is charter schools. So I know that I've listened to your show and you've lit me up a couple of times about charter schools. But I want to be clear, like there's a policy that says under Georgia law, they can be private or public, that under APS board authority, they can be approved, that the administration is charged with creating an application process. And from that application process, the superintendent shall bring forth every quality applicant for the board to consider for approval. That's how a policy works.
Certainly.
So they don't say you have to meet, the graduation rate has to increase by so on and so forth. That's a specific goal in the evaluation, but they will give broad guidance.
Yeah.
They also have the authority to approve the budget and to hire and evaluate the superintendent.
So, but within your contract, they do give you these specific goals that they would like
absolutely
for you to meet.
Absolutely.
And you are given an additional supplement. Some of these goals are tied to additional pay or
absolutely
incentive
not
pay.
Absolutely.
So there
not
are no incentive bonuses in your contract.
Not at all.
Your contract is flat and it said this is the dollar value year to year.
Correct.
And so that, okay, so that's good to know.
But I want to go back to those literacy rates because you dropped that bomb.
Let's
and I want to correct that.
Tell us about what, give us a correction. What is the state? Because there's always been, Maria, this notion that more resources go north of I-20, less come south of I-20,
right,
that the Washington Douglas, these clusters are somehow they are left lingering out here.
Right.
Whether it is attendance zone, drawing, or whatever it is.
Right.
And there are those, you do have your critics. You do have your critics. Talk about some of the things that you are hit and criticized on, or some of the areas you think that you could make some improvement in.
Okay. So in order, I'm going to do resources, and I'm going to talk about literacy rates. So I know that that there was some concern raised from you in your various interviews about performance. So there are 29 elementary schools in the clusters that I think you're talking about on the south side of the city, right? Mays, Washington, Therrell, South mm-hmm. Atlanta, Douglas, Carver. Am I missing anybody? Mays. Mm-hmm. And so that's what that's the count that I'm putting in there.
Right.
So of all those elementary schools where we're talking about literacy, English language arts, 24 of them, right, their proficiency rates are above that threshold. And some of them are as high as 40 some odd percent proficient and above.
Now, we're just talking elementary, or are we talking?
Yeah, I'm just talking about elementary.
Okay.
Elementary, because that was where the focus of that conversation was.
I don't
was
know if they reduced it to just elementary school. They just said the schools below I-20, and
well, sure. I mean, we can cut it.
Well, I don't know where it goes, because here's the thing: if you don't get it correct at the elementary school level, then by the time you graduate, we got people graduate with diploma but can't
Bingo.
Read what's on it.
Exactly. It's all about the foundation. So yeah. The focus of what I'm reporting on based on what was said is around the elementary schools. So it is that it was absolutely not true that
What about at the high school level?
And at the high school level, we still have proficiency rates that sit at around proficiency and above. When you look at English language arts across elementary, middle, and high school, for APS, when you separate, race or socioeconomics, you'll see that the rates hover around 30 to 40% proficient and above. And that's the achievement gap that I wanted to talk to you about.
Okay.
So we've seen, of course, I mean, in my estimation, based on where we've been through the last 5 years, it's a whopping gap that we've been closing, but we've been lifting everybody at the same time. So the top is getting higher and the bottom is raising, but the gap is still significant. The gap itself, on average, is going to sit anywhere from 50 to 60 percentage points. In other words, about 30 to 40% of students would be proficient on the Georgia milestones as mm-hmm. one indicator. But as far as it relates to the claim that no elementary schools in South and West had more than 10% of the kids reading on grade level, that is not true. It is, like I said, it is 24 of 29 of those schools. And some of the schools are doing a lot better than others, like West Manor and Beecher. And there are others that have more struggles, like Cascade and Scott. And then there's a bunch in the middle that are doing great, and like Fickett is a school that's on fire. Hollis Innovation Academy is picking up steam. But these are schools, when we started, it was true. They were still, almost all of them were in single digits for proficiency. And I know it doesn't sound like a lot, but you can ask any teacher or any principal working on the front lines that moving double and tripling the proficiency scores just from one year to the next is one of the heaviest lifts you can do when kids come to school without any foundation around literacy. And this is a city that has not fully invested in early childhood education. So we don't see kids when they're doing their brain development from 0 to 3 years old. And there's a lot of other wraparound stuff that's happening in the South: food deserts, lack of economic opportunity, mobility, where kids and families are chasing cheap rents, and I would also say transportation. But that's not an excuse. What we've said in Atlanta Public mm-hmm. Schools, as far as we're concerned, we need to make the biggest difference we can at the fastest rate possible. And making that difference without cutting corners means that you really have to use the resources you have to focus on the things that you can control. We try to get more supports, but that is really difficult. The other thing that you talked about money, how much people are getting in the South versus the North. I just want to be clear, like in some of our clusters, the per student expenditure can be as high as $12,000 to $16,000. And that is in the Southern the southern schools compared to other schools like North Atlanta that get something closer to $8,700 per student, or Grady where it's at $8,500 per student.
But what goes into that number? When you quote those numbers, what does that per student include, per student rate includes? What is all included in that number?
Yeah, so it's like it's the money that you actually use to do instruction. It's going to be
teacher salary.
Yeah, things of that sort. Mm-hmm. Actual supplies and materials. You'll see that we bake in some, I mean, I wouldn't call them wraparound supports, but some of the other supports that we do to beef up instruction. You'll see transportation will be another part of that number that can be included, depending on how you slice and dice it. But the point is, the data is clear. And I even went and looked for the purposes of this interview to be sure that even when we looked at SPLOST, which is the one penny sales tax for bricks and mortar, I heard y'all talking a lot about what happened in the North Atlanta cluster.
Yeah, well, we know that preceded your coming here.
Yes,
the construction of it was, but you were here for most
But you know what I
the
did?
The most expensive high school, $150 million.
That is true. I think it was $147 million. But, okay, but I went back and looked at every SPLOST for the last five SPLOST for every cluster and every project. And I'm happy to send you the spreadsheet because this is how I keep up with it. And do you know which clusters per student got the largest amount of money? And again, I know one project was hard to swallow, but when you look at the entire cluster and all the schools, which are the top three?
You tell us.
Carver, Douglas, and Washington. Then it's Therrell, South Atlanta, Grady, Mays, North Atlanta, Jackson. So I get that one project was really big and that made everybody choke. But when you take it and look at what happened over the last 5 years, South Atlanta schools did get a healthy investment and they outpaced the per student expenditure across all those TADs. And I mean, I'm sorry, not TADs, all those SPLOST. And so I even went and looked at major construction for 2019. Yeah. Tuskegee Airmen Global Academy is in the Washington cluster, $30 million. Woodson Park, $18.5 million, plus a $51 million revitalization in the Douglas cluster. Gideon's Renovation, $17 million in the Carver cluster. Hollis Innovation, $10 million in the Washington cluster. Harper Archer, $10 million in the Douglas cluster. Beecher Hills Renovation, $7 million in the Mays cluster. So Southside and Westside got $92.5 million this year alone, which we launched and I went and visited. So all I'm saying is that, well, I know in the past there were gross inequities and I saw that when I was doing the analysis. I just want the people to know that we are on to it and we have corrected that with the last SPLOST. And when you look at it over time, these schools are at the top of the per student expenditure.
All right. 404-892-2703. Look, we got to take a break. When we come back, we'll go to our phone lines. We're going to get to my favorite subject, charter schools.
Yay.
And we're going to talk about the conversation in the community. We're creating way too many of them. They are not being evaluated properly. There is nothing that suggests they are making the strides that they are. Were they in the expectation that they were? And does this say that we're not able to run our own schools if we put too many of these schools under private, these public chartered management schools? 404-892-2703. We'll come back. We have Tony on the phone, Tasha and Wayne. 404-892-2703. We'll be back. It's News and Talk, 1380 WALK. All right. Again, our conversation with Dr. Maria Karstoffen, and we appreciate her for coming and answering all of the tough questions. I don't do soft interviews. Charter schools, your propensity, do you like them? As a public school superintendent, what do you like or dislike about charter schools and the ones you've selected? Okay. And because I know what you're about to say, you have not added any.
Okay. You stole my thunder.
Kindesi. Let's talk about Kindesi.
Yeah, sure.
Purpose-built. Purpose-built is relatively new, and you did bring them.
Can we back up? Okay, so your first question was about how I feel about charter schools.
Right.
I want to be really clear, and this is, I haven't changed this story since I started. I started my first superintendency in St. Paul, Minnesota, which was the birthplace of charter schools. Mm-hmm. And so every state, whether it's Minnesota or Texas from where I came to Georgia, every state has its own rules and laws about charter schools.
Certainly.
Georgia, the state of Georgia, approved a law in 1998, and I think Atlanta started charter schools in 1999. So it's a 20-year you know, relationship with charter schools. So I didn't start them. What I care about for kids is that when you are in urban settings, which is where I have focused my career,
right.
When you're in urban settings and there are families who are coming forward saying, I've lived in my neighborhood for 30 years and none of my children have had the opportunity to have a quality education, what I know with a 3-time superintendent, not my first rodeo, getting a quality seat for a child is no easy task. Parents do homeschool, they do virtual school, they do charter school, they do private school, they do public school. And what I believe is that we actually live in a democracy, no matter what's happening in the nation. We are in a democracy where people get to choose what they believe is right for their child. So if there is a law that says, and a policy by a school board that says, charter schools are allowable and they are held to a standard, this school board has closed charter schools before and have broken relationships with them, that I am required to consider them, go through a process, decide whether or not they met the standards of the process, and then I must recommend them to the board for consideration. The board can vote it up or vote it down. And whatever they say, then I go do.
Okay, let's talk about the ones you have. That's the process. Let's
right.
talk about when you evaluate whether it's purpose-built, Kindesi, any of the schools against the, you know, because you can go right up the street, mile away, and then you got some that are not. When you evaluate them against, what is your research telling you their performance in Atlanta has been compared to the regular public school?
So there are 18 charter schools that operate with our school board authority. Okay, so what you'll see is that, for example, they're not all independently different charter schools. So like KIPP will have
right.
a large
yeah.
number of their own. Right,
some eight schools.
Right. There you go. There are about 9,800 students in our charter schools, and that represents probably about 2,000 teachers. So the longstanding existence of charter schools in Atlanta has been part of the portfolio of options for families for these two decades. We have looked at the performance of those schools against what we are required to do based on our board policy and what the state expects as well. The board has an opportunity to review all of that
mm-hmm.
when their charters come back up for renewal, which is sits like at every 5 years or so. So we get to see in real time mm-hmm. how they're doing. Are they meeting those standards? Right. If the board does not believe yeah. they're meeting those standards, right. they do not have to renew that charter.
Now, I'm
so the
you,
data says,
how are they doing?
The data says that they are doing better than, in some cases,
and
like
group,
like graduation rate,
okay.
performance on the milestones, are the basically the two big indicators. And then you'll also have CCRPI, the College and Career Readiness Index. So we look at all those indicators, and we do a big public reporting to the board about all the charter schools. So we look at them against themselves, meaning one charter school's performance compared to its year performance before. We look at them against each other. We look at them against the state, and we look at them against Atlanta Public Schools' performance. So we don't have an APS. I'm just going to straight talk because this is the mm-hmm. you know this is the show to do
right.
it. This we don't have charter schools that are failing in Atlanta public schools. Some may struggle in some content areas. Some may not be performing at the highest levels, like a Drew Charter School. But these schools are performing at or above the performance of APS and. Mm-hmm.
What,
APS neighborhood
what is the
schools,
data
by comparison.
Suggesting they're doing differently, that they're performing better? And based on that mm-hmm. analysis, why wouldn't all of APS then be under some charter management?
Well, because, again, I mean, the idea is that I don't think that there's a silver bullet for any of it. I think that, you know, some of the things that I've learned about charter schools that we stole and implemented in some of our new designs. So I'll do as an example, Hollis Innovation Academy. They are a newly innovative design that's our only pre-K-8 school in the system. The concept that we kind of stole from the best practice of charter schools is normally when a charter school opens, they open one grade level at a time. They get to build that school over time with a culture that is focused on whatever they believe, arts, college and career readiness, pick a direction. So when we closed Bethune, same kids in a neighborhood, and moved them over to the old Kennedy building now known as Hollis Innovation Academy, and we moved them over, that still is not necessarily best practice. But we knew we didn't want to put the kids out of school. We had to take them as an entire body. But what Diamond, the principal, has been able to do is from that point on, grow one grade level at a time, and then build a culture around what she does. Her focus is expeditionary learning. And so what you're starting to see in her school, a school Bethune that was on the state takeover list or would probably be on the state takeover list given performance, has actually improved over time with that kind of focus in building culture and a direction for program.
All right, we got to take a break. We'll come back. We're going to our phones. And Dr. Carson, let us know in advance. You got to about 5:30, so we're going to spend balance of our
time. That's like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
We got more to do.
I know.
Okay.
All right. Look, our door is always open.
Okay, thank you.
We got to take a break. We'll be back. We're going to get to these phones coming straight away as soon as we come back. All right. Please start into concise. Let's go to Tony B. in the Swatch. You're on with Dr. Maria Karstafen. Tony?
How do you do, Dr. Kastafen? How do you do, Dr.?
Good, good. Question? Get past the salutation to the question.
Do we look at the school financing situation in a dynamic or a static version? If the Northside schools were way ahead already, and then we are paying money to purchase materials or schools or whatever, then when we compare those numbers, Southside's getting more money, but they were further behind. I recall Morningside Elementary School as one example, that they wanted a parking deck for their teachers, but there were schools on the south side that didn't have air conditioning. And that may have been before your tenure or your time getting in. But those disparities may cause for the difference in expenditure.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that you probably could answer some. We had old inventory schools. I think that T-Splash has infused. I think when you go around this district, most of our schools are in very good shape.
Yes, absolutely. And he has a really good point. Thank you, Mr. Tony. He has a really good point. It is true. When I started, I received letters from the governor's office from our teachers saying they didn't have air conditioning in their classrooms.
Yeah.
And it was really bad. Some of the sites were just terrible. Yeah. So we went in and made a request to the board, did a quick assessment, and redirected about 60. It started with $38.8 million, then we added more, topping about $60 million of just air conditioning fixes across the system. And that's just one example. He named other things like where we would see things in North Atlanta. I know, for example, Morningside had artificial turf for their playground. Their parents raised the money for that. You know that in the south side of the city, we would not be able to raise $1 million for artificial turf. But guess what? Tuskegee Airmen Global Academy, they have artificial turf when we did when we did the renovation. So I hear you. And what we did is we went back and made those adjustments. When we could see that there might be an inequity, we baked it into the design.
All right, let's go to Tasha in Atlanta. Tasha, you're on with Dr. Karstafen.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Question real quick because we only have a few minutes.
Okay, I'm calling from the inside. I've been inside both charter and public, currently inside public. I know for a fact that these charter schools are, well, not charter schools. She says she hasn't started charters. That's true. She has not started charters, but she has partnered with organizations that run the schools as charter schools.
Certainly.
These schools get more funding per pupil. Their staff gets a step and a half more pay than public education staff members. So you have all these funds and the extra support that are going to these charter-run schools, private companies, not charter schools. that are not being placed. If that funding was placed in the public schools, we would be able to do better on that side. Second point, and I'll hang up and listen to her response. Second point is purpose-built schools, for an example, that falls under the umbrella of purpose-built communities. We know that they have a part to play with the Beltline and gentrification. So they're pushing our babies out, bringing other babies in, keeping them out because you have rules in charter schools. And then they'll say, oh, the charter schools were able to bring the grades up. No, you changed the demographic by pushing our brown babies out. I'll listen to your response.
Thank you. Charter schools, do they have to step everybody to show up at the front door?
Charter schools, the ones that we have approved,
public
are
charters.
Public charters.
Right.
And they have their own application process.
Okay, so
let me be clear. There are the charter schools that you know, Kip and Kendezi and
Certainly.
Westside Charter and all that. What she's talking about, those are eight. We have 18 of those. What she's talking about are the six partnership schools, I believe. The partnership that we did with successful charter and nonprofit providers that are teaming up with us.
Like who?
Like, in this case, one is Kip that we're doing with Woodson Park. Another is Kendezi that we're doing at Gideon's.
Okay, so you have, even within the charter,
you're
doing something a little bit different.
Answer your question, right, they do have to accept. That's why we did the partnership model. I understand that charter schools get to do their own application process, set their own attendance zone. What we did was say, you're going to serve a neighborhood school. If the programming is so great, if the strategy is so amazing, if no cherry picking and lemon dropping, every baby that lives in that neighborhood goes to that school, which is our attendance zone, then help us bring that kind of great programming inside that partnership
school. So those are only three
six.
Schools?
Six. We have six like that.
The other 18
are charter schools with the more traditional design, where they apply through the board policy.
Because I've never been able to find how much does it cost? What is our cost to operate these schools? What is that based on? Is that the same per student that you've quoted us, or do they have a different funding strategy?
No. So the partnership schools are treated like any other neighborhood school. They get a per pupil allocation that's based on expenditures. It also includes money for turnaround. So if you are a partner, we only partnered in places where we needed a very heavy lift. So they are treated like anybody else. If you are a turnaround school like FL Stanton or which is run by APS, and then you have a partnership school like Thomasville Heights with Purpose Built, you'll get the same structure and the same allocation. Actually, matter of fact, the neighborhood schools
money?
Get a little bit more.
Which one gets the extra money? The neighborhood school.
The neighborhood school will get a little bit more than the partnership school.
Right. Turn
and
that
and
down.
Not just a little,
we'll
by a couple
let
of
me,
thousand.
Let me try to get a couple more folks in.
Yeah.
Let's go to Wayne in Atlanta. Wayne.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon.
Good. You're on with Dr. Carson. Give us your question. We run out of time.
I understand we're in a rush, so I'm just going to make a quick statement. I would say that it would be ludicrous that APS would not renew this brilliant woman's contract. I'm sorry, but just listening to her, she's a thoroughbred, and we would make a huge mistake by not renewing her contract. That's just my personal opinion. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, let's try to get Abby in here. Abby, very quick.
Yes, I have a question. Dr. Kerstarf, and I know in your tenure you've had to hire, fire, and all sorts of things with staff. What would be your position if they wanted to keep their individual contracts? Because at certain times, you have to make decisions about what's in the best interest of the system. And sometimes that means sometimes people have to go and they can't stay, even though they may be able to contribute more in their own personal opinion. What makes your contract any different than theirs?
My contract isn't different. As a matter of fact, my contract when I first started was absolutely aligned to the exact same administrative contract that we were doing with our principals and administrators. So it was mirrored it all exactly. So what we say is that you measure what you care about. And if you meet and exceed those expectations, you get to stay in the job. If there's something that needs to be worked on, then you call it out and you give the person time to work on it. So I don't think my contract is any more special than anyone else's. Mine clearly has a structure that says that if there's a the board has every right, and I'm not fighting that, to determine on other independent measures that they want or do not want to extend it. And so I'm not saying that I should be treated any differently. I understand it. I respect it. All I'm saying is that I believe we've done a great job, not just me, but with a team, that I met and exceeded 5 years of expectations around what I was told was valued. And I'm not ashamed to say it. I love Atlanta. Yeah. I love Atlanta Public Schools. I'd like to see the work done. But if it is the will of the board to make this transition, I will respect it. Yeah. I will do my job every day. I will make sure that kids get 110% of me. The staff gets all the support that they need from me until the last day I can work.
Can we expect legal, behind the scenes, political maneuvering on your part to stay here?
I don't want to work in that spirit, but I do think the board, like I, must follow our policy and follow the contract of the superintendent.
What do you believe that policy has either been violated or your contract has been violated?
Well, I mean, I have raised some questions and about the policy related to the board's engagement on speaking on the issue of the contract individually. There's a clear policy called BBBA that explains how this is supposed to work. The board is supposed to work with one voice. There's supposed to be a designee on these issues. And it has just, fair enough, become a challenge when there are a lot of different people saying different things. But that's not what I was told from the policy position that we've used for the last 5 years. And so, I have no expectation, or I don't want to get into any legal battle, but I do want to be treated fairly. So if you're supposed to follow open meetings laws, then follow the open meetings laws. If you're supposed to follow policy, then let's follow policy.
You believe that they have violated that?
I believe that, that, as I have said, that needs to be checked, that people need to go back and review what the behavior is supposed to be, and I'm respectfully requesting that people get back in alignment with the way we have worked and behaved in the past, because this is not something, as you know, that we have normally done, and that APS needs to still put a positive face on the district and the work, because if you are going to transition, you want to be able to recruit a top-notch person, and you want the staff to know that we're focused on kids.
How do you answer those who just say, it's just time. It's time for you to move on. We thank you. We'll give you a nice bouquet of flowers. We will congratulate you.
Well,
we'll send you forward.
That was sort of like what I felt like the message kind of like, hey, just let's do a victory lap. Work's done. And we can go out and say, this is great for APS. But I have to live with myself. My father passed 2 years ago, and I know he sees everything along with God. And I know this. While we have made gains in progress, of which I am very proud, I know for a fact, and I know in my soul, that this job is nowhere near being done. And I've heard people say the house was on fire, and now it's not. Let me be clear. We've done a good job of making sure that APS manages itself in a more professional way, and that we are putting forward a better culture, but inside, the work is not done. And I just showed you a 58.8 achievement gap.
But here's the thing, Maria, what they will say to you is, the board will say, is we paid you to do the job. Now we're ready to make a change.
And I respect that.
They said, we didn't ask you to volunteer, we paid you. You got every paycheck. We paid you to do a job, now we want to make a change.
I respect that. That's their choice. I still, I can't help but be who I am. And I've always said what I believed.
All right.
And I recognize that it is out of my control and my hands. But I do. I felt like I was called to this job to do the work. I want Atlanta to know that I stand by wanting to finish the work. And I'll leave it to the hands of God and the board to determine what that future will be.
Our doors are always open.
And I appreciate that. I really appreciate you, Mr. Bergman.
And I will say this. Whenever we agree, disagree, she always calls. She always calls. She gets to me and let me know. And I appreciate that.
You're a good man.
Well, let
Thank
me say
you,
this. Whatever happens, I think you're talented enough and bright enough to go anywhere. And once you, we say once you've served in Atlanta, you can go anywhere. You know.
I feel that. Yeah. I feel like I've grown a lot, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be the superintendent for Atlanta Public Schools.
All right, coming up next, we, you know, I don't know where we go next, but we have Shonda Tavares and some others who say, hey, our lines are jumping. Thank you, Doc.
My pleasure. Thank you, sir. I wish I could stay longer.
All right, I'm over my...
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.